This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. If you were wondering if or how AEW might respond to CM Punk's comments from Ariel Helwani's show earlier in the week, we got our answer tonight. We got our answer in the opening segment of the show in the form of a rah-rah speech given by Adam Copeland. A rah-rah speech for how great the company is 48 hours after they cut 10 people from the roster. That is certainly a choice. On the flip side, we had a contract signing tonight for the AEW World Title match coming up at Dynasty in 2.5 weeks between Samoa Joe and Swerve Strickland, which was the highlight of the entire show, that ended with Swerve signing the contract in his own blood. And now the stage is set for Swerve to, I believe, go on to finally, for the first time, become AEW World Champion at Dynasty. It feels like the right time. It feels to me, in a lot of ways, you got to strike when the iron's hot. It may not be there a month, 2 months, 3 months from now in the way that it is right now. So I kind of feel like if you're Swerve, you better be hoping that you walk out of Dynasty with that world title, because if not, I don't know. I don't know when it would happen. It could happen to Double or Nothing. It could happen later in the year. But, you know, every month that goes by, you know, things happen. Yeah, I'm kind of reminded of there was someone, Santana. I mentioned recently Mike Santana did an interview with Chris Van Vliet about how he and Ortiz were supposed to be the AEW World Tag Team Champions at one point many years ago. And he had to step away. There was a death in the family. His father had passed away. And then when he came back, everything had changed. And all the plans they had, you know, pivoted in a different direction. And they never did. All the years that they were together in AEW, never the World Tag Team Champions. So just like that, things can change. I think that Dynasty is do or die. I kind of feel the same way about Swerve. Maybe not quite as extreme, but I kind of feel the same way about him that I do Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania this weekend. Do or die. You know, you either win it or you don't. This is going to be his second shot at it now, and I feel like this is where it has to happen. But I thought that segment was great. We also had tonight a tag team title semifinal tournament match between the Young Bucks and the Best Friends. Young Bucks move on in the tournament. They go to the finals. No surprise there. But we got the heel turn. Finally, they've been teasing it for so many months, and Trent lays out Orange Cassidy after the match. Does that mean no more Best Friends? Please. I'm hopeful. He didn't beat up Chuck Taylor. He didn't beat up Chuck. He didn't beat up Sue, his mom. That would be kind of fucked up. He only beat up Orange Cassidy. Hopefully that is the end of Best Friends. Not the biggest fan of Best Friends. Who needs Best Friends? Not this guy. Mercedes Moné. She was on the show tonight. She made it official. We now know that she is going to be challenging whomever the TBS champion is, May 26th in Las Vegas at Double or Nothing. And I certainly hope that is not going to be her first match in the company. I don't believe she used the word first, but the indication, it sure felt to me like that may end up being her first match. So showing up and getting a title match in her first match can't go down like that. I certainly hope that's not the way it's going to go down. There was a lot to like on the show tonight, even though I will say, even though there was good wrestling on the show tonight, there were segments I liked. This show did not have the same feel to it that Dynamite has had over the last month or so. Something was missing. Something felt a little off. Not as great as those shows. Not a bad show, though, and you'll see as we go along. I'll talk about what I think worked on the show. I could tell you one thing that did not work. One thing that did not work was the match between Jay White and Billy Gunn. That didn't work. I don't know whose idea that was, but that was a terrible fucking idea. Because whatever they had in mind, you know, I'm watching this match. And the other night, I've been watching random Raws with dinner on some nights. And so I brought up the July 13, 1998 episode of Raw just the other night. 2 nights ago. And do you know who was on that Raw? Do you know who was wrestling on that Raw? I think actually more than once. Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn wrestled on that show. That was 27 years ago. 26 or 27. I think 27. 27 years ago. And here tonight we had Billy Gunn. 60-year-old Billy Gunn. Great shape. Not taking that away from him. But Billy Gunn on my television screen tonight against Switchblade Jay White and what they did in that match. I mean, we'll get into it here, but my God, did that segment fucking suck? And you have somebody in Jay White, and to think that this is what they have him doing right now, what a waste. What a waste of talent. To see what Jay White was on the show doing tonight and how he was booked and how he was positioned on this show. What are they doing? What is Tony thinking? He's not. That was awful. This is your Dynamite review for April 3rd. I am the Solo Monster. Thank you for tuning in, guys. Like and subscribe. 400 likes is the goal tonight for Be the Booker. If we get there, we will do that at the end of the stream. Super chats are open. It is a very busy week for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, WrestleMania is coming up this weekend, but tomorrow I am going to be in Philadelphia, making the drive up in the morning. I'm going to be doing my WrestleMania predictions, but also as part of what I am doing tomorrow, we are going to have Mark Henry joining the World's Strongest Man, WWE Hall of Famer. He's going to be busy also. He's going to be busy in Philadelphia, so very much looking forward to chatting with Mark Henry tomorrow. And certainly, if you have any questions, if I have an opportunity to ask any additional ones, if you want to tweet me, if you want to drop one here, I'd be more than happy to try. But very much looking forward to that tomorrow. And also doing my WrestleMania predictions as well. I do want to make a note of something here at the very beginning. I want to send a shout out to Jesse at ChiTownSmark on Twitter. Jesse usually co-hosts the Dynamite Recaps with JD every Wednesday night. His son LJ has been in the hospital. He's been battling pneumonia. A very serious situation. So I just want him to know that we have a lot of people who are sending a lot of positive thoughts and a lot of positive vibes to him and to LJ. And hopefully everything will work out okay. Hopefully he will be out of the hospital very soon. I know that's a very scary situation. So again, we're all thinking about you. We had the TNT champion, Adam Copeland, out to the ring. No TNT title, although magically, by the time this segment was over, the TNT title was on his shoulder. So, like magic, there it was. But he came down to the ring here to open tonight's show. And he starts this promo, and he's getting a lot of feedback into his microphone. And we hear a lot of echoing in the arena. This did not get off to a great start. Thankfully, things settled, and the microphone was okay. He said he was here tonight to talk as Adam. You know, he's not here tonight. That's why he doesn't have the TNT title around his waist or over his shoulder right now. He's not here as the TNT champion. He's here as Adam Cole. And he asked the fans if they were having fun, and there was more feedback from the mic. He said there's been a lot of negative BS spewed this week. So right off the bat, you know, all right. Okay, they heard the CM Punk interview. They well aware of it. He said, screw that. He said he wanted to talk about positives. Sounds like Triple H at the press scrum after the Royal Rumble about the Vince stuff. I only want to talk about the positives. So he says that there's a lot of positives in pro wrestling, which is very true. There is a lot of positives in pro wrestling. There is a lot to like. He said those who go on social media just to complain, even they, are still pro wrestling fans. He said that he grew up a fan of the WWF. People started to boo. And he said, no, it's not about that. He said that he also watched the NWA, and he watched Stampede Wrestling, and he watched BC Wrestling out of Vancouver and Grand Prix. Copeland said that he knew he was closer to the end of his career than he is the beginning of it. He said that he knew he wanted to be in AEW. He said that he has seen some of the most phenomenal locker rooms in the different places that he has been through the course of his career. And he would put the AEW locker room against any other locker room that he has ever been in. He said he came to AEW because he could face Will. He did this a few times. He said he came to AEW so that he could face people like Will Ospreay. That's what he called them. Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland, Samoa Joe, Claudio, Moxley, Darby Allin, FTR, House of Black. He mentioned Brody King, but he looked into the camera when he mentioned Malakai Black. And the reason for that is he beat Matt Cardona in an open challenge on Collision at the end of that match. Lights went out when they came back on. Malakai was in the ring, and we got a little stare down. We got a little face-off on Saturday between them. So he looked into the camera when he mentioned Malakai by name. Copeland said that his friends say it looks like he's having a blast, that he says, I am. He said he wasn't knocking anybody else, but his time in AEW has been the most fun time that he has had in the 32 years that he has been in the wrestling business. Just saying a lot. 32 years. Think of everything this man has accomplished. Going back to, let's say, 98, because 98 is when he first appeared on TV. It's a long time. He said that he celebrates AEW and the men who started AEW, and that means the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes, and Tony Khan. Copeland said that they are all fans. He said AEW has pushed the industry to a better place and gives more people a chance to do what they do for a living. He said AEW makes pro wrestling better and more fun. And then he looked into the camera and he said, and AEW is where the best wrestle. I guess that's kind of their version of WCW, where the big boys play. Copeland said that AEW was moving forward. Evidently not. Evidently not, since this was clearly a direct reaction to you-know-what. But he said that they're moving forward. He said there was a reason that Kazuchika Okada and Mercedes Moné and Will Ospreay came to AEW. Why he came to AEW. Copeland said he wanted to introduce a man right now who symbolizes everything that AEW will be going forward. Will Ospreay, who came to the ring, got inside, and he looked at Copeland, and they both smiled, and they both shook hands. This promo was so transparent, I almost saved it as a PNG file. I mean, holy shit. We got a rah-rah speech here from Adam Copeland about how great the company is, and everybody should be positive because of all the positive things that AEW does. And AEW does do a lot of positive things. The fact that AEW is around is a positive in and of itself. And I have never understood the people who have said that, oh, I can't wait until the company goes under. I can't wait until AEW goes out of business. I can't wait until Dynamite gets 200,000 viewers, right? I mean, we hear this kind of shit all the time. And it's really just, it's very dumb. It's just fucking dumb. Because whether or not you watch AEW, if you care about AEW, if you pay attention to what's going on, it doesn't matter. AEW employs a lot of people, not just people like Adam Copeland, who don't need to be working anymore if they don't want to. And it gives you an alternative in that there is a place that these people can go to work and ply their craft. And there's another two-hour wrestling show every Wednesday and a two-hour wrestling show every Saturday, and that's a good thing. So we know this already. We don't need Adam Copeland to come to the ring and tell us this. We already know this. And I do appreciate his enthusiasm because he mentioned in the promo that I wanted to come out here and talk about this. Almost like he requested the time to come out and cut this promo. So it's entirely possible that in light of the Punk interview with Ariel earlier this week and a lot of people dumping on the company, that he may have gone to Tony and said, look, I'd like to go out there and this is what I'd like to say. Now, I believe they were already promoting an Adam Copeland in-ring promo days ago. I don't know when exactly they started promoting that Copeland would be on the show. I could be wrong. Maybe they started yesterday. I thought that they were promoting it for several days. So I don't know if there was something else that originally he was going to come out and say. I don't know. It's very possible that he went to Tony Khan. It was his idea. And he said, I would like to do this. And Tony said, okay, I'll let you go out there and do it. I appreciate his enthusiasm for the company he works for. I appreciate the fact that he's trying to go out there and deliver a positive message. They did not need to spend the first 8 minutes of the show doing this. We did not need Copeland out here in this unofficial response to what Phil Brooks said on the MMA Hour earlier in the week to come out here and tell us how great AEW is. This did not need to be on the show. And as far as, you know, what Punk said, I'll address that separately. There's just far too much to unpack with that. And I think his message, again, his message is a noble one as far as focusing on the positives. But there is another side to this. You want to come out here and you want to talk about the fact that, man, there's so much negativity. So much negativity and toxicity right now, which there is. You just go on social media and you see Reddit or any kind of message board or forum anywhere. It's all over the place. It honestly is as bad as I've ever seen it. And so that's true, but you have to admit, even if you are an AEW fan, and if you're not willing to admit this, then you're simply being a homer, and you're looking at things through a very narrow lens. The reality is, AEW bears some of the responsibility for some of the tribalism that we see out there right now. Because they have to understand that when Tony Khan goes on Twitter and tweets some of the stuff that he does, or when you have a wrestler going out there, or a former WWE star going out there on Dynamite or Collision and cutting a promo and taking little digs and taking little shots to get a reaction and to get a rise out of the crowd. Ooh, you know, I can't believe he said that about WWE. I can't believe he said that about Triple H. I mean, we've seen this a lot over the years in this company. And so what do you think that's going to contribute to? All that's going to do is get people riled up, and it's going to contribute to the tribalism. So I hope that they take their own advice, because AEW is as guilty of it as anybody else. And if they want to start delivering a positive message, can't we all just get along? Can't we all just look at the positives of being a professional wrestling fan? Yeah, you know what? That would be a great idea. How about you stop feeding into it yourself? It just came off to me like, you know, let's go out there and let's, you know, and let's, you know, again, this didn't need to be on TV. But let's be honest here and not pretend that, you know, this company doesn't feed into it themselves sometimes. You know, and WWE is guilty of it at times in their history as well. But their hands aren't exactly clean either. So that was the opening segment. Now we got into the actual wrestling action, which was Will Ospreay one-on-one against Powerhouse Hobbs. And we had a battle of the wills here to open the show tonight. Don Callis was at ringside on commentary. Ospreay had beaten Takeshita at Revolution. He beat Kyle Fletcher on Dynamite a few weeks ago. So now it was Hobbs' turn. And he got pounced. Ospreay did, right at the bell. Hobbs tried a pop-up strike. Ospreay hit a dropkick in midair. Ospreay realized that it was pretty dumb to go for a strike battle against this man, so he used his speed to send Hobbs to the floor, followed that with a slingshot forearm. Hobbs blocked a whip. Ospreay cleared the barricade, but he got caught by Hobbs with a vertical suplex onto the ring steps. So a world's most dangerous slam repeatedly onto the apron followed, and that led to Hobbs hitting a fallaway slam where he dumped Ospreay over and onto the announce desk. He bounced off to the floor. That took us to a commercial break. I'm all fired up now. Now you got my juices going here. Now I'm all fired up. How am I going to go to sleep now? I got to wake up early in the morning. I mean, this is like a cup of coffee now. How am I going to be able to go to bed? This pisses me off. So when things came back, Ospreay, he fought back with a handspring wheel kick, followed by Pip-Pip Cheerio for a near fall. Ospreay tried to fire off some chops, had no effect. So a slap to the face followed. Ospreay knew he messed up. Hobbs grabbed Ospreay by the throat. He delivered an overhead throw. Then he blocked a tornado DDT. Ospreay, though, managed a Stun Dog Millionaire. Hobbs countered with a lariat to the back of the head. And then a power slam for a two count. Hobbs went up top, missed the frog splash. Will Hobbs should not be going up top. When he does, this is the sort of thing that happens. Ospreay hit an Os cutter, only got a two count. He wanted a hidden blade. Hobbs, though, countered into a world's most dangerous slam, which Ospreay countered himself into a cradle for two. So Hobbs lowered the straps. He wanted a spine buster. Ospreay spiked him with a DDT instead, followed with the Sky Twister press that he calls the leap of faith. And it looked like on his way down, the weight of his leg, his knee, came across right down on Hobbs' head. He looked a little stunned. Hopefully he was just selling. Ospreay waited for him to stir, get to his knees, and then Ospreay finished him off with the Hidden Blade. After the match was over, Kalish tried to check on both of his clients. Hobbs was pissed, and he got up in Ospreay's face, and Kalish got between them and tried to calm him down. I thought this was a really good opener. I mean, the end was never in doubt. Will Ospreay is on a collision course with Bryan Danielson going into Dynasty in 2.5 weeks. So we kind of knew how this was going to go, but I thought this was a good styles clash here. Hobbs was the final member of the Kalish family for Ospreay to run through. Like I said, Takeshita, beat him. Kyle Fletcher, beat him. Hobbs, beat him. And so now it would seem like the end is near, very soon, for the love affair between Don Kalish and Will Ospreay. It's only a matter of time. So as Ospreay was exiting up the ramp, Bryan Danielson walked out right past him. He was applauding on his way to the ring for his match with Lance Archer. Now, if the finish was never in doubt in the opener, it was even in less doubt here when you consider the win-loss record for Lance Archer in this company is not great. This was even more predictable. Archer steamrolled him right at the very start, and Danielson tried to target the leg. He got swatted to the floor. Danielson tried for a dive, but he got caught in midair. He got chokeslammed on the apron. Archer then grabbed a ring attendant, body slammed him on top of Danielson. That took us into the picture-in-picture. Shout out to Bobby's World, which just gifted 10 channel memberships. Thank you, Bobby. Appreciate it. So it was all Archer during the break. I mean, Archer took the majority of this match. Danielson, though, flipped out of the corner, tried a running charge. Archer ran through him with a crossbody. And then Archer tried his rope walk. Danielson pulled his leg out. He got crotched on the top. Danielson fired up with some corner drop kicks. The third one, though, got countered into a bear hug, which Danielson himself countered into a lapel lock. Archer's a big guy, though, so he was able to get his foot on the bottom rope. He rolled out to the floor. Danielson connected with a charging knee off the apron. Back inside, Danielson connected with his missile drop kick, and the S-kicks followed. Archer, though, blocked the head kick into a choke slam for a two count. So Danielson fought off a blackout attempt, and he countered it into a rear naked choke. Archer just shrugged him off, and then Danielson hit a busaiku knee. Archer blocked the second one. Danielson hit a series of head kicks, and then one final busaiku knee for the win. This was another really good match here. Back-to-back quality matches on this show. Very similar to the opener in that you had here it was Archer as the bigger man. It was Archer as the powerhouse. Danielson was fighting from underneath. Same thing in the opener. You know, Hobbs was the powerhouse. I mean, it's literally in the man's name. He was the powerhouse of the two. And in both cases, Danielson and Ospreay, or Ospreay, sorry, Adam, they had a fight kind of from underneath, really, and use their speed and use other ways to pick up the win, which of course they did. So, I mean, look, it's booking 101. If you think about it, going into Dynasty here with Danielson and Ospreay, you know, trying to one-up each other, very similar to Danielson beating Katsuyori Shibata on Collision a few weeks ago. What happened? On Dynamite the following Wednesday, Will Ospreay said, well, you beat Shibata, I can beat him too. Which he did. So it's like a cat-and-mouse game here between these two. Renee was out on stage to welcome Lionheart. Chris Jericho, are you as tired of seeing this man on TV as I am? Please tell me I'm not the only one. So she wanted to know the status of the relationship with Hook. Jericho said that it was only consensual. I mean, he said that he offered to be his mentor. And even though he agreed, he said something that's been bothering him. Hook said something that bothered him. And so he wants Hook to come on out here so they can have a conversation. And so he told them to hit the Hook signal, and they showed his logo up in the rafters, and out walks Hook. He was, I think, in a leather jacket, he had like a beanie on his head, almost covering his eyes. I'd be honest with you, he walked out here, he looked like someone standing outside of a high school playground selling drugs. So he's standing there on stage. Jericho said, Hook agreed to get advice from Jericho, but he also said that he knows who Jericho is, which is a comment that Hook made. He said, yeah, I know who you are. Apparently, this bothered Jericho. And Jericho said, when you play the game at the highest of levels, like I do, the rules are different. And once you understand that, you'll understand what I'm trying to teach you. He says, I'm not asking you to trust me 100% right now, but I am asking you to believe in me as much as I believe in you. So Hook said, yeah, I believe in you. He believes in him so much that he got them a tag team match on Collision. But he said he's going to be keeping his eye on Jericho. And then he put his fist out for a fist bump. I had to specify fist bump, you know, given the way that he was standing out there. That's a different kind of bump. So he wanted a fist bump from Jericho. Jericho said that he wouldn't expect any less. He's learning already. Bet. And then he bumped him back. After this, we got a Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty backstage segment talking about facing Jericho and Hook on Collision. So I guess we have our answer as far as who their opponents are going to be. Taylor said Lion Hook would get their ass beat by Shane Taylor Productions or Promotions. Same thing. You know, it's not even that Jericho working with some of the younger people or people lower down on the card is necessarily the worst idea. Like, theoretically, if you have a star like Jericho, because he is a star, right? He's been around a very long time, former world champion. Not saying that he doesn't have a wealth of experience that he could be sharing with some of the younger talent on the roster. Hook is still very green. He's on the ascent. In theory, it's a nice idea. The problem is Chris Jericho is staler than month-old bread. You know, like if you leave the bread out, it doesn't even take a month. I mean, I could buy a loaf of bread 5 days later, it's turning purple. That's Chris Jericho. He shouldn't be on TV right now. He is the very definition of somebody who needs to go away so that people will appreciate them more when they come back. How many months? I don't know. I'm just tired of seeing him on TV. And in my view, as I see it, it's the law of diminishing returns. Because whatever you're hoping to get out of this, by associating Hook and Jericho and hooking him, you know, hooking Jericho kind of to the Hook bandwagon here, I don't know how much he's going to actually get out of it as far as in the eyes of the fans, right? I mean, he may learn things by working with Jericho behind the scenes and stuff, but as far as what you and I are watching on television every single week, I just don't see how anybody can find this terribly interesting. And how is this in the end going to benefit Hook in any kind of significant way? If people don't care about Jericho, they don't care enough to invest in this because Jericho has just been around for so long without taking any kind of extended break. And he's gone back and forth from heel to babyface, babyface to heel. Now it looks like he's about to go full-on heel again very soon. What does it mean? I mean, does anybody care about Jericho and Hook? Jera-Hook? I mean, does anybody care? He needs to go away. He needs to go away for a while. Come back. He'll be fresh. And then they can do whatever they want with him. But I think he is the perfect example of somebody who would benefit by taking a break. Switchblade Jay White. Here's the low point of the show. It was not that last segment. It was this. Because this went on for a lot longer than that last segment did. At least that last segment was not terribly long. Switchblade Jay White against Billy Gunn. This is on the heels of Bullet Club Gold breaking into Billy Gunn's home. I guess they didn't really break in. I mean, his sons let Jay White into Billy's home, right? Where Billy and his wife dwell. Because they aired this on Collision the other night. And then Billy walks in the front door and he sees them right before Jay White is about to smash his flat screen TV. And he goes, what the hell? And they all go running out of the house, right? So now Billy Gunn is pissed and he's back for revenge. That's the story here. They did do one cool thing. They did a very cool reveal. When Jay White came out, you know how they dim all the lights and they put the spotlight on him? So they did that. And then in the background, you see Billy Gunn walk up behind him. But Jay White has no idea that he's there. But then when he turns around, there's Billy Gunn, and Billy knocks him down on his ass. So I thought the way they shot that was very cool. That was the only cool thing about this match. After that, they brawled down to the ring for a bit, very quickly ended up inside the ring, but then ended up in the crowd where we had Billy Gunn proceeding to kick this man's ass all over the crowd. He is beating this man's ass. I mean, look, I know that guys would bump and sell their asses off for 64-year-old Sting. But you know what? It's Sting. And I'm not going to say it the way Tony Schiavone does. It's Sting. Not Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn's been around for a long time. Billy Gunn is a star in the business. Billy Gunn is no Sting. Even though he is physically bigger than Sting. I don't need to see Jay White for 5 straight minutes getting his ass handed to him by Billy Gunn in the crowd. But that's exactly what we got here. Jay White is somebody who should be one of their top guys right now. If he's not number one, if he's not number two, he could be number 3, 4, 5, or 6, but he should be one of the top names in this company, and this is what they have him doing. There was an early spot where Billy broke the count. I should mention this. Then they brawled into the crowd, but this was weird because he breaks the count so that he doesn't want to get counted out. They end up in the crowd, and what happens? Aubrey Edwards follows them into the crowd. So what was the point? I mean, if they're not going to enforce the rules, I don't really understand. I guess that was kind of pointless. But this went on for far too long until they finally got back in the ring. And just as soon as they did, what happened? Jay White got clotheslined right back out to the floor. And then we got clotheslined right into the commercial break. So they come back from the break. White finally sidestepped a corner splash, got his first offense of the match. I don't know how many minutes in we were at this point, probably 6 or 7 minutes. And he drop-kicked out Billy's leg. White wanted a Famouser. He ran right into a Tilt-A-Whirl slam. White rolled to the floor, and we saw the Acclaimed backstage on the big screen laid out. And so Jay White then tried a Blade Runner. Billy countered into the one and only. And then Billy hit 2 Famousers. He signaled for a third. So they wanted you to believe that he had this man dead to rights. He would have hit that third Famouser. That would have been it for Jay White. But instead, because he made this personal, Billy went outside and he retrieved a steel chair. So here come Austin and Colton Gunn. Here comes his offspring. And they get in the ring and they're begging and they're pleading with their father not to hit this man with the chair. Billy tosses Austin aside, and then Jay White hits a low blow for the disqualification. A rare instance of an AEW referee actually doing their job. Don't worry, though, because Rick Knox would bring things back down to a sense of normalcy later in the show. We get a rare DQ here on AEW television. So Jay White grabs the chair. He was about to go for a chair shot when the Acclaimed ran out from the back. Apparently they woke up from their slumber. Here comes Bowens. Here comes Caster. They clean house. Billy decks Jay White. The Acclaimed clean off the top of the announce desk, and they were teasing that they were going to suplex Jay White through the table. But the Guns made the save, and they bailed through the crowd. This was fucking terrible. I mean, this was just fucking terrible. And it's bad enough that Billy Gunn took 97% of this match. I shit you not, okay? 97% of this match went to Billy Gunn, including the spot where it looked like this match was over, but it only didn't end because he chose to go for the chair outside. After all of this, on top of that, it ends in a disqualification low blow finish. Very appropriate that we had a guy in this match calls himself Daddy Ass. Ass is what this match was. Easily the worst thing on the entire show. And we are left to believe that Jay White simply cannot beat Billy Gunn. Can we not at least have Jay White beat Billy Gunn and pin him? Even if he has to cheat to do it. Not that that would make him much better, but he couldn't even get a win over Billy Gunn. We have to go for the cheap DQ, make it very clear that he couldn't win any other way. Couldn't win at all, because it's a win for Billy Gunn. Technically, he beat Jay White tonight. It's like I said before, Jay White should be a top 5 guy in this company. Doesn't have to be the world champion right now, but he should be in the mix with some of the top names in this company, and instead they have him doing stuff like this. They've had him and the Guns The Ring of Honor six-man titles, who gives a shit? Who cares? Who cares? Now, I thought the Bang Bang Scissor Gang stuff, I thought was bad enough. I didn't know that it could get worse. I was elated when Bullet Club Gold turned on them and they finally did the split. I said, my God, I've been waiting for so long for this. At least finally we can get away from this. I had no idea that this was going to continue and this was going to be just as bad. This man is spinning his wheels. His stock is falling bit by bit every single week that this goes on. And it was very telling to me when the Acclaimed ran out and they went to go tease suplexing him through the announce desk. It was very quiet in the building. You know, it wasn't like people were clamoring to see this, right? I mean, the reaction was very lukewarm because these fans probably don't give a shit about this. The Acclaimed have never felt colder than they do now. Jay White has never felt colder than he does right now. But at least we're getting Billy Gunn in the ring for, what was this, an 11-minute match here on TV? And this is as bad as I've ever seen it for Jay White in this company. And this is saying something because this man lost. I know he lost to a one-legged man at Full Gear. I remember that. I get that. This is worse. What they have him doing now is worse. At least then he was competing for the world title. He was in the mix. Awful. Renee was on stage to introduce Willow Nightingale for an interview. Chris Statlander and Stokely Hathaway came out with her. I like the way they shot this. They shot this in a way with their backs turned to the crowd. So you had the view of the ring and the view of the fans in the crowd. It was very old school, like some of those old WWF style interviews they used to do on stage many years ago. So Tony said that, Willow, of course, is someone who was always full of positivity. She says she feels mother fluffin' great after her win last week. She said that she's busted her butt all around this town. They were in Worcester tonight, Worcester, Massachusetts. She said that she used to wrestle at the White Eagle. And apparently the people in town knew exactly what the White Eagle was because they gave it a big pop. And she said that this is her home away from home. And they all learned who she was, grinding, going up and down the road, working shows there. Every time she questions if she belongs in wrestling, the crowds reassured her and they helped her blossom into who she is today. She said that she is going to be smiling as the smiling face of TBS after she beats Julia Hart. Stokely then spoke. He said that Willow last week had what the kids call a banger. Out comes Mercedes Moné. CEO is emblazoned up on the Tron. She walks out on stage. She tells the crowd to say hello to their CEO. She can't wait to see Willow and Julia Hart tear it up at Dynasty. And then she said that she gets next. Whoever the TBS champion is, come Double or Nothing, May 26th in Las Vegas, she has next. And she is going to get the next shot. Willow, I will say, in this segment, came off like more of a star here than even Mercedes did. She's just so damn likable. I thought this was a great promo by Willow. Just a great babyface promo. I'm not sure what Mercedes is supposed to be. She comes out there, and really her whole gimmick, it is very heelish. You know, she's not really meant to be a heel, I don't think, but I thought Willow came off great here. And, you know, she comes out here, Mercedes, and she says, I've got next at Double or Nothing. Now, I could have sworn that last week, AEW came out with its latest set of rankings. I was hopeful that the rankings were done because the rankings, or at least the way they do them, is very dumb. They put out two sets of rankings after Tony Khan made the announcement they were coming back, and then they vanished. And people were tweeting him every single day, Tony, are they done? Are the ratings done? Are you bringing the rankings back? And no response. So I, like a lot of people, just assumed, okay, good. They thought better of it. They're done. And then, boom, last week, hey, we're going to have a new set of rankings out. Now, I have no idea if they're going to be monthly now instead of weekly, bi-weekly. I have no idea. But it's interesting that they would bring the rankings back and then have Mercedes come out here on this show and say, whoever wins at Dynasty and comes out as the TBS champion, I got next at Double or Nothing. I can't recall them stating that when she signed her contract, this was in her contract or anything like that. So this woman walks in, has not wrestled a single match yet, regardless of how big of a star she was somewhere else. She has not yet wrestled a single match, and she's getting a championship match. And what I would presume, and they didn't say this outright, but what I presume may end up being her first match. Now, I certainly hope that Double or Nothing does not end up being her first match. This woman debuted on television on March 13th. We should not have to wait until May 26th to see her wrestle, unless she is not medically cleared. Now, that's not what she said. When she was cutting promos and talking, she said that she's 100%, she's back, you know, she's coming out, she's moving around fine. So I would imagine that she's medically cleared. I certainly hope that Tony Khan, if she is, I certainly hope that he is not planning on holding her off until Double or Nothing. I think a match with Chris Statlander at Dynasty would make a lot of sense. And they have 2.5 weeks left until the pay-per-view to set that up. But there was no indication given here that that's the direction they're going in. So whether it's a Dynasty or if it's on Dynamite in the next several weeks, we need to see this woman in the ring as long as she's medically able to. She needs to be in the ring and at least have a couple of matches before you gift her a TBS title match. And look, if that's what you want to do, if that's the decision that Tony Khan makes, okay, fine. But then you can't, in the other breath, say, well, we have a ranking system in this company. It just doesn't make any sense. It defies all logic. It just defies logic. You know, you can't have it both ways. So, which is it? We had the Young Bucks against Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta. Semi-final match in the AEW World Tag Team Title Tournament. I liked how we had Excalibur here. He mentioned that if this match were to go to the 20-minute time limit, FTR against Top Flight on Collision, that would be for the vacant tag team titles, which is true, right? I mean, it makes sense that if we didn't get a decisive winner here, that would have automatically become a championship match. So he did point that out. This was actually a very good match here. I mean, I enjoyed the match. Good action. But I tell you what I enjoyed more. I enjoyed what came at the end of the match more than the match itself, which is what we're going to skip ahead to here, because Trent Beretta hit his running knee as a top rope double stomp strong zero connected. Nick Jackson, though, broke up the count only to get wiped out by an Orange Cassidy dive. And I should mention that Sue, Trent's mom, was on the outside of the ring. She was sitting there. She was like their corner man or corner woman. And she, I sound like David Schultz now. She's a woman, and she's sitting outside the ring, rooting on her son, rooting on his team. She's a bad luck charm for him. It didn't work out well for them tonight. Beretta charged at Matt Jackson, who hit a slingshot on Beretta into the exposed buckle. Turnbuckle pad was missing in the corner. And he went face first into it, fell backwards. Matt got a schoolboy, hooked the tights, which of course Rick Knox did not see, because Rick Knox is legally blind. And he doesn't see that sort of thing. He doesn't see very well. And so the Young Bucks pick up the win. They move on now, predictably, to the finals at Dynasty for the AEW Tag Team titles. When the match was over, Trent was on his knees in the ring, visibly upset over what had just happened. And he slowly got to his feet. And Sue is outside the ring. She's standing there kind of at the foot of the ramp. In the ring, Trent gets up, and they want to do the best friend's hug. So Trent goes to one corner, and Chuck Taylor goes to one corner, and Orange Cassidy goes to the corner opposite Trent. And then instead of coming in for the hug, Trent charges in, and he blasts Orange Cassidy with a knee strike, and he wipes him out. And Chuck had a look on his face. I wasn't sure where things were going to go with him. You know what this reminded me of? I'm not comparing the two angles. I'm just saying when they showed Chuck, I recalled when Seth Rollins hit Roman Reigns in the back with a chair. When he killed the Shield, which is still a sore spot for me. I'm still very, very traumatized by that night. There was still a lot of gas left in that tank. But nonetheless, I remember them zooming in on Ambrose Moxley. And I wasn't sure if he was with Seth, or if he was just like legitimately just as shocked. He had like a shocked look on his face, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't totally sure if he was going to side with Rollins and they were going to put a beat down on Roman. And then he tried to attack Seth and then he got beaten down as well. So I kind of had a similar moment here where Chuck looked a little confused. I didn't know if he was going to join in and they were going to put a beat down on this guy or if he was going to, you know, go to him and say, hey, what the hell are you doing? He didn't do anything. He didn't say a word. He just stood there and Trent left the ring and he walked right past his mom. And he walked to the back. I, for one, am very happy to finally see this angle here because they've been teasing this Trent Barretta heel turn. There's been lots of little hints and teases for, I feel like, several months now. And so they finally pulled the trigger on it here. I don't care for Best Friends and the whole Best Friends faction. I really don't care. It's all played out with me. I know. I feel the way about that, the way people, you know, feel about the Dark Order. And I feel that way about the Dark Order, too. I don't care about Best Friends. So if they want to bust up the Best Friends, I'm perfectly fine with that. I don't know what that means for the future of Trent and Chuck as a team. Again, I can't say that I really care that much. So I, for one, am very happy to see them finally do what they did here. And now I assume that we're going to get Orange Cassidy and Trent Barretta, and we'll have to wait and see where the loyalty lies with Chuck Taylor. Is it going to be with Trent? Are they going to be a heel team? I think it would be in their best interest, because if they split them up, Trent Barretta by himself, Chuck Taylor by himself, they're dead in the water. I mean, they are dead in the water. In this company, with all the people they have on the roster right now, did you see some of the names that got cut the other day? I mean, you don't think that one day their names may not end up on that list? If they go single, I'll tell you what, that may happen sooner than later. Things are going to go about as well for them as a single as it would have gone for Ortiz had he not torn his pec, which he just had surgery for. Best wishes to him. So I personally think it would be in their best interest to keep them together as a heel team. But we'll wait and see where that goes. But yes, the Young Bucks move on to the finals. Who are they going to face? I'm going with FTR. I mean, I could see the upset. It would be an upset if they didn't win. You know, we've already gotten the Bucks and FTR a whole bunch of times. But I feel like as a pay-per-view match, and because I feel like the Bucks are getting the belts anyway, Bucks and FTR, Dynasty is the way to go, probably the way things are going to end up. This week's episode is sponsored by Factor. You know, with how busy I am, and you may be the same way, it can be hard to eat right. Eating junk is just easier sometimes, but you don't want to be doing that. With Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, eating better has never been easier. Every meal is fresh, never frozen, dietitian approved, and ready for you in just 2 minutes. You've got over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto, plus more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. Factor is a meal delivery service that ships fresh, ready-made, chef-crafted meals right to your doorstep. My Factor meals have been even better than I expected. This is no TV dinner, I can tell you that. Get started today and get after your goals. I mentioned 2-minute meals. It's true. All you have to do is heat them up when you're ready and chow down. There's no prepping, there's no cooking, there's no cleaning involved, no cleanup at all. They have plenty of options for the entire day, including pancakes for breakfast, midday bites, and more. They're also flexible for your schedule. No matter how busy you are, you can get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals each week, and you can pause or reschedule your deliveries at any time. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. And I don't do much cooking, so this is perfect for someone like me. And when you sign up, you save. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/solomonster50 and use the code solomonster50 to get 50% off. That's code solomonster50 at factormeals.com/solomonster50 to get 50% off. Mariah May against Thunder Rosa. This was a number one contenders match for the AEW Women's World Championship. I like how they kept the screen in color as Mariah May was making her way to the ring, and she had Timeless Toni Storm and Luther with her. So they kept it in color. But during the match, because Toni joined on commentary, and whenever they cut to the announce desk and they showed Toni, then it was black and white. But for the entrance, they kept it in color. There was an exchange here earlier in this match that I honestly, I'm sure she must have cleared it with him. I'm sure she must have, because that would have been pretty low, honestly, if she just kind of busted this out on her own. I don't know how many of you are aware. Tony Schiavone, unfortunately, he lost his dog. His dog passed away the other day. His dog, Bug, he loved that dog and had that dog for many, many years. And anytime a clip from his podcast would come across my timeline on YouTube, you know, you would see Bug in the background sleeping. So Bug passed away. And he never missed a beat. You know, I thought he would at least take off, I think, Collision on Saturday. I think he was there. You know, he just went right back to work. But they're sitting there, and Tony Storm goes, Mr. Schiavone, I'm sorry you lost your dog. And he said, thank you. And she goes, but now we get to watch Thunder Rosa. I was like, I don't know. The last thing I would want to think of, maybe it's just, yeah, I remember when I, you know, lost my cat. And it's a traumatizing thing. Last thing I would want is to be reminded of it when I'm trying to, like, just focus on anything else but that. But I was like, man, that was something else. But now we get to watch Thunder Rosa, she says. So Rosa wanted a Death Valley driver on the apron early. And Mariah slid out a sunset flip bomb, only for Rosa to counter into a Hurricanrana. Rosa hit a diving crossbody against the barricade. Took to a commercial after that. Mariah took control. Storm said that on commentary, she said Mariah reminded her of a young Tony Storm, while Thunder Rosa reminds her of an older Thunder Rosa. So Mariah connected on a backdrop driver. Rosa avoided a corner charge. Mariah tried a head scissors. Rosa fought off, only to roll through a top rope double stomp attempt. Mariah fired off a headbutt, wanted her Mayday finish, but Rosa hit a backstabber and then the Tijuana bomb, and she picked up the win. And Toni Storm on commentary, she looked stunned. She was speechless. She had nothing to say. And so at Dynasty, it will be Thunder Rosa challenging timeless Toni Storm for the Women's World title. What breed is it? I don't know. I know what the dog looks like. I don't know what breed it is. It's a small dog. It's not a pug. Facially, it kind of reminds me of one, though. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what breed of dog it is. Or it was. Hard-hitting match here. More hard-hitting than I expected it to be. Yeah, you watch Mariah's matches and you can see some of that stardom influence come out. And Rosa, again, she punches her ticket to Dynasty. The longer-term story here is Toni Storm and Mariah May. All About Eve. I mean, it's just ripped right out of that. That's the longer play here. Thunder Rosa just, you know, kind of feels like she's slotted in as just another challenger for Toni to beat. Maybe they do Toni and Mariah Double or Nothing. Yeah, because they really haven't teased anything else or set anything else up. We know Mercedes is going after the TBS title first. Britt Baker, nowhere to be found. Jamie Hayter, nowhere to be found. Deonna Purrazzo had her shot, lost. I mean, who else would step up, you know, for Double or Nothing? I could see them doing Toni and Mariah on that show. We had a backstage segment here with Penta, who was joined by Alex Abrahantes, who said that Penta is for the people. And they have been asking for Penta to carry gold. Penta then challenged Adam Copeland to a TNT title match next Wednesday on Dynamite, which we were then told has since been made official. Tony Schiavone was in the ring for the contract signing for the AEW World Championship match coming up at Dynasty, and he introduced Swerve Strickland, who was out to the ring with Prince Nana. Then he introduced the AEW World Champion Samoa Joe, who came down to the ring not in his suit this time. You would think, you know, for all the times we see Joe come out in a suit on this show, that the actual time there's a contract signing, he would be in a suit, but he was in a t-shirt. So he came down to the ring, immediately took a seat at the table, quickly signed the contract. Swerve, meanwhile, he still has his jacket on. He's pacing back and forth. So Joe says that he thought that he would give Swerve some advice. little bit of advice here before he decides to put pen to paper. He says he understands where Swerve is coming from, including his Texas death match against Hangman Page, as brutal as he was in that match, and then getting not one but two championship opportunities, right? It's been this ascent month after month for Swerve. And he said that everybody can see how this story ends, right? With everybody celebrating a big championship win here for Swerve Strickland winning his first title. That's the best information that he's been working on, because he's about to drop some truth on this man. Or as The Rock would say, he's about to drop some gospel on this man. He said signing this contract is doom and destruction. It is a career-defining mistake to step into the ring with him right now. He says, I'm going to leave you mentally scarred like you left Diddy's party too late. And that got a reaction from the crowd. Of course it did. It's about as classy as the Big Show telling John Cena that you're the white boy and I'm Kobe Bryant in their battle rap many years ago on SmackDown. Joe said, now that Swerve has the right information, why don't you do the right thing? So then it was Swerve's turn. And Swerve said that he wanted this moment his entire life. Said that he dreamt about it because he didn't think it would actually become a reality. He didn't think it would actually be possible. And he said his destination is filled with a long, winding road of obstacles and roadblocks, but when he arrives, he said that feeling is sweet. A dynasty is what he is building in AEW with signings like Okada and Mercedes Moné and Will Ospreay. The crowd at that point, I'm not sure how, by the way, these signings are part of a dynasty that he's building. That's what he said. But then the crowd started an MJF chant, and that seemed to fluster him a little bit. He didn't know how to react to that, so he didn't. He just kind of let them finish, and then he moved on with his promo. Swerve said that Joe is the definition of a killer, but so is he. April 21st in St. Louis at Dynasty, he shows Joe that he is every bit of that man. He grabs the keys to the Dynasty, and he turns AEW into whose house? Now run the fade on that, bitch. Joe didn't like that, and Joe gave him a shove. Swerve blasted him with a right hand, and then he pulled out a chain. And Swerve wrapped the chain around Joe's neck. Joe's got that big, thick neck, though. So it didn't really work, and Joe headbutted him. And down went Swerve. Last time Joe headbutted somebody... Joe got headbutted by somebody. That's right, it was Kurt. It was Kurt Angle who headbutted him, not the other way around. And Joe came up bleeding. So this time it was Joe delivering the headbutt. And then Joe took the chain, he wrapped it around his own fist. When Swerve got up, nailed him in the head with it. Swerve took a bump over the table that was in the ring. And Swerve came up bleeding. And Joe worked him over in the corner with more chain shots. Joe left the ring. Starts making his way up the ramp. And Swerve is in the ring. He's bleeding and he's crawling slowly over towards the microphone. And he starts laughing maniacally. And he says, hey, Joe, I love this shit. And if you think that's all you got, then I'm taking your championship from you. He picks up the pen. He rubs the pen across his forehead in the blood. And he proceeds to sign the contract in his own blood. I've seen contract signings before where, like a couple of times. Like I know for the first blood match, I think Austin and Undertaker had in 99. I think they did an angle where they put a beatdown on Austin. And Vince had a pen and he put Austin's blood in the pen and signed the contract. So like I've seen that. I don't know if I've ever seen someone sign the contract though with their own blood. I'm sure it must have happened. I just can't recall. So Joe, I mean, his eyes get big. His eyes look like they were going to bug out of his head. He can't believe what he's seeing. He charges back down to the ring. And Swerve just sat there on his knees. He gave himself up. Joe gave him one kick, picked him up, hooked him up for a Uranagi, and planted him through the table. Right in the middle of the ring. And the show ended with Samoa Joe standing tall with his title above his head over Swerve's body. As Samoa Joe stood tall, and he looked down at this bloody mess, and he said, "Look at you now. Look at you now. Look at you now. You ran your mouth, you paid the price. Left in a pool of his own blood. Just like Cody Rhodes." These Samoans, man. I don't know what it is with these Samoan guys. They like to bloody people up. Wonder if Cody will get blood on Sunday. What do you think? His big moment? Think they'll let him bleed? He's a Rhodes, so I mean, you know he wants to. This is a great segment to close out the show. They gave us the best here for last, and I said it at the beginning, I still believe that Swerve really needs to take that title at Dynasty. I'm still enjoying Joe as the champion, but I just feel for Swerve's sake, this is the right time for them to make the switch. I will tell you, though, in this segment, I thought that Joe pretty well smoked this guy. And that's not to say that Swerve was bad. I'm not even really talking so much about the words, and the verbiage in the segment. It's just how he carried himself and his intensity. His intensity is just unmatched by very few people that I could think of right now in wrestling. I'm talking about Samoa Joe. Joe is a fantastic promo. Swerve, I think, is a very good promo, but he's not Samoa Joe level. And who knows, maybe one day he'll get there, maybe in time. Few people are. But if I was grading this on points to Joe. I think Joe ends up with more points here in this segment. I like Swerve getting color. I like the whole thing with the pen and signing it in his blood. I thought that was very cool. And so I thought it was a great segment to cap off what was a good episode. When I look back on it, look at what we had on this show tonight. It's a weird thing because I was left feeling like, I don't know, the show just, there was something off about this show. But we had a very good match with Ospreay and Hobbs. We had a very good match, I thought, with Danielson and with Archer. I thought the tag team match was good. And I thought, thankfully, we got the heel turn at the end of it from Trent Barretta. Mariah May and Thunder Rosa, I thought, was a good match as well. And we had a great closing segment. So, I mean, there was a lot to like on the show tonight. The one thing that I will absolutely not say that I liked, because it was the worst thing on the show, was the Jay White match. The Jay White and Billy Gunn stuff was inexcusable. There's just no good defense of that. I don't care who you are. You could be the most diehard of AEW fans. They can do no wrong. I don't see how you can watch that segment and say, oh, this is great. This is a great segment, man. This was great. I'm excited for this. Like, no. No. I don't think so. Hopefully they can move Jay White onto something else. I just don't know anymore. I really don't. I feel like I've said that a whole bunch of times with him already, and it just never seems to change. But they've got to do better than that. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. How would you grade Dynamite here for April 3rd? 37% give this show thumbs up, 29% thumbs in the middle, and 33.7% give this show a thumbs down. So the thumbs down is almost even with thumbs up. We'll see if that evens out. I'm sure that will even out a little bit more as the night goes on, as more votes come in. We already have 1,200 votes in, though, and that's not a great score. Dynamite has seen better days in the Twitter poll. I thought Dynamite was on a hell of a hot streak for the last month. I'd say even like 4 to 5 weeks. And then you have tonight's show, which was good, but I don't know. There's just something was off as compared to some of those recent episodes. Something felt different. Maybe it was that opening segment that kind of soured me a little bit. I don't know. Just very, very transparent thing there at the beginning. Let's take a look at your super chats and see if you guys agree with me. See what you guys thought of this show. Let's start out here with some of the early ones that are not on screen. We'll start out with Jerome Eugenio. Hey, thank you for the $5, Jerome. Jerome says he likes Swerve, but he wants to know, do I think... this is good. I saw this question come in before. I wanted to address this. He says, I like Swerve, but do you think viewership is down because they don't see him at that level yet? And I saw that before, and I think that's very unfair to Swerve. Because that would imply that the shows are really built entirely around him. And that they have positioned him as their... number one guy, and you know they're all in on him and he's dominating the shows, and that's just not true. And I think it's very unfair to lay that all at his feet. I also think that if that were true, if I was Tony Khan, as far as Swerve goes, I don't change a thing that I'm doing. I still think it's full speed ahead with him because I think Swerve is the guy, the next guy. Ospreay will be the guy after him. But I think Swerve is that guy you want to get your world title on. If the people are out there who don't believe in this man yet, you have to give them a reason to believe. And I think the way you do that is you continue to push him at a high level. They'll put that title on him, whether it's Dynasty or some other time, and then he'll get his run, and we'll see how he does. There are people who end up becoming world champion. Like in the past, when there was even more of a focus on the ratings than there is today... I can remember when Eddie Guerrero won the title for the first time. He beat Brock Lesnar, and it was this great moment. And he was champion for about 3 or 4 months. And he put a tremendous amount of pressure on himself because he really wanted to perform. He felt like, okay, they put their faith in me. I'm the champion now. I'm the face of this SmackDown brand. So I feel like I have to deliver. And I think the ratings may have gone down. They were struggling with that a little bit. He took that personally. And they got the belt off of him. They put it on JBL. Am I going to sit here and say that, boy, Eddie Guerrero was a shitty champion, or the people didn't believe in Eddie Guerrero? Eddie Guerrero, even before he passed away, had plenty of fans. And I thought Eddie Guerrero was doing a fine job. It doesn't necessarily mean that they should immediately pivot and go to something else. How you make new stars is by investing in them. I just talked about this in the podcast the other day. I was talking about Paul Heyman, when he was the executive director of Monday Night Raw. And the reports at that time were that he told Vince McMahon point blank, he goes, look, we need to make new stars. This is not going to happen overnight. The ratings are going to suffer. The ratings are going to go down for a while. But you need a 12-month plan, 18-month plan. And they had Aleister Black, and they had Andrade, and they had all these people, you know, that he was first starting to push. And then Vince, a few months in, pulled the plug. Because he panicked, because the numbers were starting to go down, and he said, no, we can't have that. But you have to do that. You have to build around new people. You have to invest in the future. You have to have a long-term plan. So I would not lay that at the feet of Swerve. I think that's unfair. And frankly, if there are people who aren't sold on him, then you got to give it time. You can't just quit on the guy and go back to the same old, same old. You know, that's like an old Vince McMahon panic move. I don't want to see them do that. I think that would be the wrong decision to make. Got to create new stars. Ospreay is already a big star for them. He'll become even bigger. Swerve is a guy who they can also build around. And they should be. Hey, Philly Dry Chicken, thank you for the double super chat. He says, the feeling of AEW to me is like watching dry paint. Company needs to be cool again. The wrestlers they chose makes pro wrestling so boring. Please, wrestling gods, make Swerve Strickland the world champion. See, so he feels the opposite. He thinks the product is boring and they need to make Swerve the champion because that'll make it more interesting. See, so he believes in Swerve. We got one person here who believes. We got two people. Me too. We got two people who believes in Swerve. Oz and Glorious, thank you for the five. Yo, Scapegoat, I love your work. Young Bucks are on fire right now. Fuck corporate money punk, says Oz and Glorious. Dry Chicken says, support CM Punk's interview with Ariel Helwani. I'll give Ariel credit. I mean, he asked the questions that I think most people in that situation would have asked. I thought he did a good job with it. We'll talk about that soon. Troy King, what are the odds of a Mama Rhodes cameo this weekend? Oh, 110%. There's zero chance that we do not see Mama Rhodes, at least on night 2, if not night 1 and 2. It's guaranteed. Unregistered Hypercam with the $5 super chat. Mercedes showing up and doing nothing reminds me of Jericho returning to WWE in 2012 and doing nothing but smiling for 4 weeks. Feels kind of eh. Was that 2012? Why did I think that was 2007? I think you're right. I think it may have been 2012. Dry Chicken says, having great matches isn't bad, but doing it every week on AEW television can be desensitizing. Just tell a story. Where is the imagination? Well, they are telling stories. You can't say they're not telling any stories. I'm not going to say that all their stories are engaging. I mean, they're telling a story right now with Joe and Swerve. Right? That's one story. They've been telling a story with Willow and Statlander feuding with Julia Hart and Sky Blue, and Willow has made the claim, you know, she says, I'm going to be TBS champion, now Mercedes comes in, and it makes all the sense in the world to put her and Willow together, given their history together. There's a story there. You know, Willow was her last opponent when Mercedes got hurt, and had almost, basically, not even almost, a year of her career taken away from her. I think that's going to be the story that plays out there. You can't say there are no stories. You can say you don't like the stories. You can say the stories are boring. That's a fair criticism, but you can't say they have no stories. I keep hearing this. AEW should have stories. Like, there's no story. Do these people even watch the show? Am I watching the same show as some of these people? I don't even like all the stories, but there are stories on the show. There is an over-reliance very often on just the in-ring, or just putting on dream matches. That does get old. Yes, I agree, and people can get desensitized to that. But you can't say there are no stories. That's just, it's a weird thing to say, and I keep hearing it from different people. Very, very strange. We have got Give Me Backshot Sala Monster with a $5 super chat. Says, thoughts on a Bianca and Jade two-man power trip-esque reign where each have the women's titles and the tag titles at the same time. I don't like it. We already had that with Sasha, and we had that with Bayley, and we had that with Austin, and we had that with Triple H, and we had Evolution with all the gold at one point, and the Judgment Day had almost all the gold at one point. I don't want to see that. If they win the women's tag team titles, I think that would be fine. It might actually make the women's tag titles feel meaningful. Because, you know, with Bianca and with Jay, they're going to get pushed. I think that could, you know, be a story that works, because then it eventually leads to the split. We get Bianca against Jade. I have no interest in seeing them hold all the titles. I have zero interest in that. Base Beer says, can you ask Henry if he hurt himself at all when he broke the padlock by pulling the chain off the cage? And has he worn the salmon suit since, and then feelings on Rye? That's a lot of questions. We'll see. I don't know if he'll have the salmon jacket. I'm gonna say no. You know, they should have the jacket. Should be like in the Smithsonian or something. I mean, that thing is legendary. You can't just be wearing it out like any other jacket. Should be in the Hall of Fame. That jacket should be right there with him in the Hall of Fame. Dev to Dust, Lyra Valkyria looks like Elaine from Seinfeld when she's not in her in her wrestling attire. Also, it's funny how CM Punk ranted about AEW 10 years after WWE. See, now I'm not going to be able to unsee this. Lyra Valkyria looks like Elaine from Seinfeld when she is out of her gear. The Juliet says, question for Mark Henry, does it? Boy, you guys want to know about the salmon jacket. A lot of salmon jacket fans here. Oz and Glorious, I applaud AEW for embracing the tribalism when they're an entire grifter industry dedicated to shitting on AEW and predicting their demise. Well, don't be talking about 83 weeks like that. Don't be talking about some of those podcasters. They're not going to like that very much. Jeremy Watley. I know most of the news this week will be about Punk trashing AEW, but I really think AEW has a great core of talent that can propel AEW forward. They have a tremendous core of talent. It just boils down to how they're used, how they're booked, what kind of matches, you know, Tony decides to put together. What works and what doesn't. You just got to find the right mix. You know, and some of their big names are out right now. Some of their big names are out. And that's one of the things that really bothers me the most about the Jay White stuff. Is because when I say that he should be one of the top, you know, in the top five of the company, you know, or even the top half dozen of the company, this is at a time when they don't have Kenny Omega and they don't have MJF and they don't have Adam Cole. I mean, think of the names that are out that are not even active. And you can't find a spot higher up on the card, something for Jay White to do. It's indefensible. Oz with another five. Thank you, sir. Says, if AEW was entirely dedicated to ignoring the noise and looking forward on the positive, we would still have Cornette, Russo, Bischoff, and others rabbling on. I think Russo has admitted he doesn't even like wrestling. He just does it. He does it for the paycheck. He's got his brand. He doesn't even like it. The way he sometimes talks about it, it's like he's tortured. He's being tortured just by watching it. Either that or maybe he's watching late 90s, early 2000 WCW. I don't know. Hey, Barry, thank you. Barry MK with the $5. Can you say fork? I don't know what you're up to. I don't know what you're up to, but I don't like it. I'll say fork, and we'll leave it at that. Nick Grasso, Adam Copeland, shilling the company came off desperate, and it was unnecessary. Tony Khan once again showing how thin-skinned he is. Hey, Nick, thank you for the $4.99. Appreciate it, brother. Base Beers, who's got it worse right now, Jay White or Chad Gable? Well, you know what? I'm going to say Jay White. Chad Gable should be at ringside at WrestleMania this weekend in the corner of Sami Zayn. Chad Gable, if I'm thinking along the lines that they're thinking, and I hope I am, there might be a glimmer of hope for Chad Gable in this story where maybe he really is the Rocky and Sami Zayn is the Apollo Creed. And it's not Sami playing the role of Rocky. There's still hope for Chad Gable. At this rate, I'm not sure how much hope there is for Jay White if this keeps on going like this. Hey, Dry Chicken, thank you, man. He says, Chris Jericho being overexposed on AEW is a perfect example of why I lost interest. Overexposure in pro wrestling can decrease your audience. Well, it's one of the reasons why I said when Okada got brought in that, you know, we shouldn't see him on TV every week, and we haven't. He wasn't on the show tonight. There are certain people, and I would even put Ospreay in there, where you want to have Ospreay on the show on most weeks, but you don't need to have him there every single week. Okada, they should handle even more delicately, and they should have him on the show even a little bit less. You know, I mean, I don't really think you want him on the show every week, because I think it just takes some of the shine off of him. You know, there's got to be a happy medium between having somebody on the show every single week and Roman Reigns. That's the scale. You can find that happy medium. That's how I would use Okada. And Nick says, why is Mercedes getting a title shot without having any matches? Screw the rankings, I guess. Both Julia Hart and Willow Nightingale deserve better than that. We've got Philly Dried Chicken says, Tony Khan, hire Scott D'Amore and let him be head booker. Well, that is not going to happen. If he hires Scott D'Amore and makes him head booker, it'll be for Ring of Honor. It would not be for AEW. This is Tony's baby. He's not going to let it go. We have got Magician Sapphire with the $10 super chat. Magician Sapphire playing a magic trick. Just like that, $10 appears. Thank you, brother. I wasn't feeling Dynamite tonight. Willow's promo and Swerve Joe were great, but everything else was mid to bad. Most of the booking and storytelling on these shows are ass and have no heat to them. See? Storytelling. Doesn't mean it's good, but they're telling stories. That's what makes that argument so silly. Very appropriate super chat from Uffman, coming in with the $15. Uffman, thank you. Bender McSimpson. Even if Bullet Club win the trios titles, what happened to Jay White was horrible. Interesting that Matt Jackson said scapegoat. I enjoy your work. Yeah, you know, it's... whatever. I guess I could see Jack Perry being part of the Elite at some point, but I've kind of soured on him too. I can't say I have much interest in seeing him back on TV either. Philly Dry Chicken says, logic, common sense, and imagination versus AEW booking. Kung Fu Joseph with the $4.99 says, women's sports have become more popular when they open the doors to online betting. AEW should open the doors to FanDuel and DraftKings. Do you not see the AEW DraftKings ads every single week on TV? I mean, they're already in bed with DraftKings. Come on, man. Come on, Joseph. Bobby's World. Hey, Bobby, thank you for the $20. Very, very kind of you. Apologies for my absence. I work early mornings now, and I'm old, tired, hurt, and I work with children. But I am old, and I go to bed too early for the streams, but I am always here with you guys, never far away. Well, we are very happy to have you, old man. Magician Sapphire, look at this, making yet another $10 super chat magically appear. For all the new signings and set designs, a lot of the same problems with AEW still plague this company. Tony Khan wants to run AEW as a business and hobby. It's a problem and will continue to be a problem. Yeah, I'm going to have more to say about... Tony Khan and, again, the punk comments and everything. I'm actually going to try to maybe do something tomorrow, maybe at the hotel. If not, we'll save it for Sunday. But I will address that Ariel Helwani interview in the next few days. Justin G says, love to the Bugamaniacs tonight, brother. That's right. Condolences to Tony Schiavone on his loss. Sucks losing a pet. Chris AXC, what would Mania look like if Punk was not hurt? Rock was not implicated. The crowd did not revolt against The Rock. Who is the biggest WrestleMania XL snub? Well, thankfully, it won't be Bobby Lashley. At least he made the card this year, unlike last year. I still say, you know, for me, Chad Gable feels like a snub. I still feel it should have been Gable and Gunther once Brock fell off to the wayside. Sheamus feels like a snub, but I question whether or not he's even going to be back. I don't know what his status is right now. Him not even being on the Mania card is pretty crazy to me. If he is healthy and coming back and just waiting on creative, you know, how do you leave him off the card? Bobby's World. Shout out to Dr. Bropio. Hope he is doing better. Did something happen to the good doctor that I'm not aware of? Hey, everybody say hello to Steve Mello, who is joining us in the chat tonight. Our good friend Steve, our resident artiste. Brian Mahoney, Punk since Brawl Out. Literally everything he has said about AEW has been severely damaging to AEW. Maybe lame way to respond, but AEW is under real fire. They cannot just ignore him, in my opinion. They did not have to go on television and address him. I disagree. Just because Punk goes out there and he puts his side of the story out there does not mean you need to let 8 minutes of television time be occupied by having one of your top names go out there and talk about how great the company is, because to me that doesn't really solve anything at all. All it does is draw more attention to the situation when the focus should be on the stories going into Dynasty. Now, if you want to put out some kind of a statement on social media, if you wanted to post a video like The Rock does, he goes on his Instagram and he posts 20-minute long social media diatribes about Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins on his own time, then that's fine. Anybody can go on their social media and post whatever the hell they want. I don't think that it needed to be addressed on television. It just comes off very transparent. And even if it was Copeland's idea and he's the one who pushed for it and not Tony, it comes across like Tony Khan wants to send somebody out there to say nice things about himself and his company. And it just comes off very lame. So no, it did not need to be addressed. If they just focus more on their product and focus, or just keep their head down and focus more on putting on the best show they possibly can, that's what they should be doing. And I said it at the top. The timing of it is also very weird because they cut 10 people on Monday and then you send Copeland out there to talk about how great the company is, which a lot of what he said may well be true. But the timing of it, I think, is a little sus. Maybe not the best time to be doing that. Bobby's World says, a while ago, you were talking about mirror matches and Be the Booker. You booked Hollywood Hogan against the immortal Hulk Hogan a couple of months ago. I do remember that. Yeah, no, I booked a few of them. I think we did Andrade against Andrade at one point. I think we had Kurt Angle against Kurt Angle, which would be fucking amazing. That's how it lands in Be the Booker sometimes. You land on the same person twice. No cap, all speculation, but that Copeland promo felt like a pick-me-up for Tony Khan. AEW needs a Be the Booker permanently. Nash DTV with WWE 2K24 getting a new patch today. Are you willing to give it another go? I am planning on giving it another go. Not this week, though, because I'm just so busy. But that's good. I've actually been waiting for another patch. Hopefully the patch will work. I don't have a patch on my arm. I don't have a nicotine patch. I don't have an eye patch. I will get my 2K24 patch, and we will see if that fixes some of the problems that I had. So, I don't know when. It won't be until next week. I will dip my toe back into the 2K24 waters, and we will see how it goes. Dylan Hensley. What's up, Solo Monster? Here's a helpful tip for new wrestlers. That's right. Dylan is currently training right now. He says a babyface should not throw the first strike in a wrestling match because then it is a fight. Interesting. I look forward to you sharing more knowledge with us as time goes on. See? You're learning. Bobby's World, you spilled all that water you were carrying for AEW at the beginning of the stream. Well, you know, I dropped my pail. I dropped my bucket on the floor. All my AEW water spilled out. But it's good, though, because I've got my WWE water over here. Until I spill that. And then I'll pick this one back up. No cap. The continued. Hell am I saying? The Continental Classic quote-unquote storyline was a bust. Did nothing for Eddie Kingston, and he dropped the meaningless belt to Okada. Well, that was the end result. That was the end result of what could have been a good story. You're not wrong. It is a meaningless belt. At least when Kenny comes back and he feuds with Okada for it, it'll feel special. But yes, you're not wrong. It is a meaningless belt. Uffman Entertainment. Just got home from the garden, saw my Rangers beat the Devils. Can we get it's time for WrestleMania. A la the horny, drunken, crazy old Irishman. It's time for WrestleMania. Is that what the crazy, drunken, old Irishman said? Well, at least your team won. Wish I could say the same about the Mets' early part of the season so far. BCOM, see clearly. Solo. I have had coworkers harass, call me slurs, and even one talked about me being shot in the head still did not choke him out or punch them. Where the hell do you work? That this is going on at your place of business. They talked about shooting you in the head. I think you need to find another job, my friend. That's what I think. I'm more concerned about where you're working these days. Holy shit. The Juliet. Drew is on the poster for Clash at the Castle. He has re-signed. Yeah, I mean, he's not going anywhere. Drew McIntyre is not going anywhere. Not for a very long time. Reek Gotti, CM Punk, said that he hated WWE. He is a D-rider. No, he likes the money. So he's got to make money. They all go crawling back. Everybody does it. At some point, they all go crawling back on their hands and knees. DL Hudson, you know what I found actually most interesting? I don't want to get into this now, but I watched the entire interview, and it was fascinating to me that when he came into AEW, the first thing he said was, you know, in January of 2014, I left sports entertainment, and here in August of 2021, I'm back in professional wrestling, right? And all the shots and all the little digs and everything else. And he revealed that during the time that he was out of the business, you know, he did the stuff with Fox Sports on the WWE Backstage show. And people thought that, okay, that was just a deal with Fox Sports and WWE was going to try to bring him back in. And he admitted that, like, he had conversations before that. He thought he was coming back even before that. He was ready to come back. He wanted to come back. And then nothing happened because they didn't want him. And so his attitude at that point was like, well, then basically just like, fuck them. All right. But like, that to me is one of the more interesting revelations from that interview, is that, you know, this whole time you think, okay, he wants nothing to do with these people after everything he went through, after everything he said about them and the litigation with the doctor and firing him on his wedding day and all of this stuff, right? He doesn't want to go back to WWE. Meanwhile, he thought he had a deal to go back to WWE. And then they basically said, fuck you to him. Then he goes to AEW and he talks about how, man, I'm so happy to be back in professional wrestling. Finally, you know? It's funny. It's just funny to me. Oh, it's hilarious. DL Hudson. Can you see DIY turning heel to coincide with Candice LeRae's heel turn? I don't really want to see a heel DIY right now, but yeah, I mean, it's possible. I don't think it's going to happen. I just think they're better as baby faces right now. BCOM see clearly, some people want AEW to fail, which is weird. Why? Because they're idiots. Sometimes that's all the explanation you really need. Logic need not apply. Brian Mahoney, to me, being Booker is a trial and error position in wrestling. I would argue the hardest in the entire entertainment industry. Is Tony up to the challenge to be better? We'll find out. Time will tell. But Brian, thank you, man. Thank you for the support. Philly Dried Chicken says, I would love to invite Gunther to my cookout. Would you invite Gunther to your cookout, Solid Monster? Absolutely. But who's cooking at the cookout? Because I don't cook. So if he's going to cook, if he's going to bring the meat and he's going to cook, then he's more than welcome to come to my cookout. You're all welcome to come to my cookout as long as you provide the food and the cooking. I will be here to consume it all. We'll have a big cookout this summer. How about that? Bobby's World. Is Andre the Giant a better actor than Hulk Hogan? Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Because The Princess Bride and his role in it is better than anything I ever saw Hulk Hogan in. It's one of my favorite films growing up as a kid, The Princess Bride. I mean, so is No Holds Barred, but Princess Bride is much better. Bobby's World says, that is Bobby's World. Bobby, thank you. Reek Gotti, CM Punk is for whoever signs his checks. Oz and Glorious, regarding someone's comment on Tony Khan's outlay on AEW. In the NFL, EPL, they have to deal with salary caps, exponentially higher salaries, teams getting relegated, etc. Also, he says Jericho's shamelessly bigoted wife is not helping him. What, did she say something publicly that I'm not aware of? I don't follow Jericho's wife, so... Is she traveling once again somewhere? Bobby's World says, didn't Bropio have food poisoning a week ago or something? If not, I apologize and disregard that super chat. Yeah, I mean, I think he was talking in the chat about something. The way you made it sound, I thought that something happened today. Hopefully he's okay. Todd Warner, do you think Sheamus, if he comes back, should still try for the IC title since he never held it? It's the only story left for him. Absolutely. If Sheamus sticks around, he's got to challenge for that title at some point because it's the only real story left for him. It's the only thing he really hasn't done. Jazz Jackrabbit, maybe Gable gets a WrestleMania 9 Hogan spot before the IC. I don't know. Where Gunther kind of laughs at him. And says, you know what, come on in here, I'll put the belt on the line right now against you. I don't like it, and I'll tell you why. I don't like it if they do it in one night. Because Gunther would have just wrestled this long match with Sami Zayn, and then for Gable to... It's almost like a Money in the Bank cash-in at that point, where the guy's already wrestled, he's been beaten down, and... But... If, let's say, he beat Sammy on night one and then said, laughed at him, right? You're nothing. You want a shot at this? Come back here tomorrow night, night two. I'll put my title on the line against you. I'll beat you too. And then you do the match on night two. I can get behind that. And then Gable gets a big win on night two. I think that'd be pretty cool. Uffman Entertainment. I will gladly cook at the cookout for you and the chat. Good. Good. We have our first chef. BCOM C. Clearly says, no, in 2017, I was shot in the back of the head and my coworker said because he was mad, how would you like to get shot again? I kept my cool. Again, man, I don't know where you were, but that's crazy. You need to get a more stable job. You need to be like an accountant. Be like a CPA, right? That's very boring. Make good money, but it's very boring. Safe. Oz and Glorious with another five. Man, Oz is on a roll tonight. Take. Lance Archer's the most talented big guy in AEW, but his Hot Topic rave presentations holding him back. Needs to align with the Righteous. What are your thoughts? He was already aligned with the Righteous. Weren't they already together? They were like Jake's crew. It didn't go anywhere. So, no, I don't think he needs the Righteous because they already did that once and it didn't work. Archer, I think, is someone who is definitely underappreciated, underutilized, taken for granted. Physically, he is one of the bigger guys they have on the roster, and he probably has one of the worst win-loss records. I bet you if I looked it up right now, he probably would have one of the worst win-loss records in that entire company. So, I think he is underappreciated. I think that's a fair point to make. For the Murder Hawk Monster. That's right. By the way, thank you for the additional gifted memberships that we had a few moments ago. I did peek them. They were going too fast for me, but I appreciate that. The goal for Be the Booker tonight has been surpassed. You'll be very happy to know. 400 likes was the goal. We are currently sitting at 422, so give yourselves a round of applause. We have some more messages coming in here. Oz says, I mean visually, align with the Righteous's gimmick. No, I don't think he has to do that. I think you could just push the guy and come up with stories for him separate and apart from that. Let him cut promos more. He doesn't even really need Jake. You know, Jake just signed another one-year deal with the company. At this point, I think Tony Khan is just, you know, he likes having somebody like Jake under contract. I think Jake has something to contribute even behind the scenes. If he's mentoring people and giving advice to people, if he's giving advice on promos, I think Jake could be valuable just for that alone, more than anything on TV. You know, I know he wants to bring back the Snake Pit. Archer doesn't need Jake doing the talking for him. You know, it'd be nice to hear him cutting more promos on his own. I don't think he needs the Righteous or to be, you know, similar to the Righteous or kind of looped into that story. I don't think that's necessary. Brian Mahoney, Suburban Commando is by definition a guilty pleasure for a wrestler to appear at your. Is that a period or a comma? Because I missed that. And it was just one long run-on question. So let me start over again here. Or actually, I think I was looking at two different... Oh, this is going too fast. That's what's going on. There's too many messages coming in. Which is good. It's a good problem to have. But let me get myself sorted here. Because I'm mixing Super Chats. Which, it's kind of like Ghostbusters. Where you're not supposed to cross the streams. Don't cross the Super Chats. Then I get very confused. All right, so Brian Mahoney says, Suburban Commando is by definition a guilty pleasure for a Hogan film. I can't lie. Seeing Undertaker so young and the ridiculousness of it. Yeah, Suburban Commando is a guilty pleasure of mine as well. I like that movie too. Christopher Lloyd is great. Undertaker, his voice. His voice in the movie, like when you finally hear him for the first time and he's got that high-pitched voice. I agree with you on that. Chris Faplander with the $1.99. Thank you, Chris. Coyote. Okay, there we go. Acme versus Coyote. I couldn't remember what it was. He's already deleting it from my brain. Hey, Manny, thank you for the $5. That CM Punk interview must have really gotten to Tony. He even has FTR cutting a promo on Punk on Collision. Yeah, it's so ridiculous. They're so gotten to. You know, that's how it comes off. How like, oh, they're so gotten to that they have to respond in this way. There really is no need to respond on the actual shows. I don't know. All right. Like I said, we hit the goal. Time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
All right, let's do it. Because this is the final stream before WrestleMania. So we got to do it up the right way. That's what we need to do. No SmackDown stream on Friday. I'll be traveling home from Philly to New York. Probably during SmackDown is when I'll get home. Or actually, probably at the end of the Hall of Fame. I'll probably get stuck in traffic. But let's do this. Tag Team Be the Booker. We begin with D-Generation X, Shawn Michaels, and Triple H. This is the DX from 2006. This is the DX I did not like. D-Generation X. Still two very big names, though. Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Getting into the ring with Billy and Chuck. I cannot get away from this Billy Gunn. I watched Raw from 1998 the other night. He was on my television screen. I watched Dynamite in 2024. He's on my television screen. I be the booker. I book my own card He pops up on my screen. I can't get away from this man. What is going on here? What is going on? Oh, my God. What was that show on USA Network, that fake reality show they had for a while there years ago with that guy who doesn't know that he's on a reality show, and then they reveal it to him, and he's like, what is going on? The hell was the name of that show? All right, women's Be the Booker. Women's, I know, I booked it. It's my fault. I booked it. I should look in the mirror and blame myself. All right, here we go. Chris Statlander. Chris Faplander is going to be very happy that we landed on Chris Statlander here. All right. Former TBS champion Chris Statlander. Who is she going to be stepping in? Oh, the Joe Schmo Show. Yes. Oh, my God. The Joe Schmo Show. What a stupid show. What is going on? It was on Spike TV. Chris Statlander going to go one-on-one with Jamie Hayter. Oh, I miss Jamie Hayter. Did we get that match? I don't even remember now. Chris Statlander and Jamie Hayter. Maybe one day we'll get to see that match. Or see it again. Hopefully. Possibly. That is a very enthusiastic bell. I'm very much in favor of that. All right, main event time. Main event time with the mighty Yokozuna. As if we didn't have enough Bloodline members this weekend, we have Yokozuna here in Be the Booker. Yokozuna, very agile for a big man in his day until he allowed his weight, unfortunately, to get out of control. Very out of control. But if you saw Yokozuna early in his career, man, that guy can move. All right, let's get the drum roll. Yokozuna against Stone Cold Steve Austin. And do you know that we actually got a Stone Cold Steve Austin Yokozuna match? And it was, of all places, on the pre-show for SummerSlam in 1996. Everybody loves to talk about how Austin cut the Austin 316 promo and how it launched him into the stratosphere after King of the Ring. What they don't remember is that 2 months after he cut that promo, he was on the fucking pre-show wrestling Yokozuna. It was not an overnight success, no matter how many times they try to portray it that way in their documentaries. It was not an overnight success, and it was not a good match. By that point, again, his weight was bad. They did a finish where he was going for the bonsai, and the top turnbuckle broke. And he fell backwards, and so Austin pinned him, and that's how he won. Not a very exciting way to finish the match. He fell. That's how he lost to Bret Hart at WrestleMania 10. That was their big finish for him. He would just fall. He would fall off the ropes. And the person would pin him. How exciting. Justin Hesse. Just gifted 10 channel memberships. Look at all the green that we have. Look at this. All the green in the chat. You love to see it. You love to see it. You know what I love to see? Some more messages here. Let's go through them. Zachariah Sitchin, thank you for the $9.99. I did not have FTR turning heel on Punk on my bingo card. I just checked Twitter. Like, bruh, let it go. I can see more shots on the way in, not the drink. So I'm going to have to check this out after. Apparently FTR cut some kind of promo during the Collision tapings, because they taped Collision tonight to air on Saturday. And evidently they talked about either CM Punk, or they alluded to the CM Punk interview, I guess, is what I'm gathering here. Philly Dry Chicken. says, this week is going to be wild. WrestleMania week and Final Four college basketball, and I'm rooting for the UConn Huskies for both men's and women's. Yeah, a lot of sports stuff. March Madness still in full effect. Justin Hesse, thank you for the $20 super chat and the gifted memberships. He says, enjoy Philly and thanks for all that you do. Much love from Central Illinois. Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you very much. All the way from New York. I say thank you, although I will be in Pennsylvania in a few hours, but I am in New York right now. And dried chicken and steak without flavor. Also, let's go Cody Rhodes and Pharaoh. Finish the fucking story. And Juan Ocampo with the $4.99. The my tribalism after the Punk interview is ridiculous. I love Punk, but he wasn't innocent either. Point to the sign before WrestleMania Night 1. There it is. Enjoy it. Because this sign ain't going to be up for that much longer. I'm ripping it down Monday morning, so... then it's gone for another year. It's almost that time. It's also almost time for WrestleMania predictions, which I'm going to be recording tomorrow at the Duncan Music Lounge at the iHeart Studios in Philadelphia. Thank you to our friends at Fox Sports for inviting me, which is very exciting. And I'm also going to have the opportunity to chat for a little bit with the world's strongest man, Mark Henry. Is going to be joining me, and I don't know how long I'm going to have him for. We may not be able to do all the predictions with him. I'll at least try to get his thoughts on the main events this weekend, but I got some questions for Mark, and it's going to be very cool. I am very much looking forward to hanging out with him tomorrow and with some of you. I know it's a very limited space, but we are going to have some fans there, and it'll be good to see people. It'll be good to talk WrestleMania. Again, I want to thank Fox Sports for inviting me, and I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow. I'm also looking forward to House of Glory, which is coming up on Friday, so I'm sticking around in Philly. I'm staying overnight, because not only are we in Philadelphia tomorrow, but we are in Philadelphia on Friday, which is the reason why there's no SmackDown stream. Even though the Hog Show is at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I will not be home in time, but 3 p.m., if you can't be there, which if you don't have a ticket, you can't be there, because the show is completely sold out, which is awesome. But House of Glory and Wrestling Revolver are partnering up for a big show that includes Mustafa Ali for the first time ever going one-on-one with the Amazing Red. Mike Santana and Alex Shelley are going to have a champion versus champion title for title match. Hog against Revolver. It's going to be a great time. Looking forward to that as well. And then, of course, WrestleMania coming up this weekend, both nights. I'll have the recap live here on the YouTube channel as soon as the shows are over. Saturday night, Sunday night, in between Sunday at some point, episode 856 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off podcast. Come on back for all the content that's going to be going up. Thank you for the love. Take care.